Tune into this brand new episode in which we demystify public speaking for speakers and presenters. What are the skills and tools required to present yourself best both in a virtual and a hybrid setting, and how to build meaningful connections and relationships that will amplify your reach?
Welcome to Events Demystified Podcast, where we explore and demystify the world of in-person, virtual, hybrid event AV production and technology by sharing insightful tips, tricks and tactics to make your events a success. This podcast is brought to you by Tree Fan Events, a woman-owned boutique event production agency. And your host is Anka Trifan, a technical event planner and producer with almost two decades of hands-on technical experience in event production.
Welcome to another episode of Events Demystify Podcast, your one-shop stop for tangible, technical, and practical planning advice for anyone in the event industry. Today's episode is sponsored by Trifan Events, a woman-owned boutique production agency that provides a strategy, technology, and gear to host a successful virtual or hybrid event. And I am your host, Anka Trifan. On the show with me today, I have Brendan Kumarasamy, founder of Master Talk, where he coaches ambitious executives and entrepreneurs to become top 1% communicators in their industry. He also has a popular YouTube channel called Master Talk with the goal of providing free access to communication tools for everyone in the world. A fun fact about Brendan, he can karaoke in 8 languages. He speaks 3, English, French, and Tamil. Without further ado, let's welcome Brendan to the show and learn more about his communication master skills. Welcome to the show, Brendan. How are you today?
Life is always great, Anka. How are you?
Well, it sounds like life is great on your side of the world. Where are you at right now, physically?
I'm based in Montreal. How about yourself?
Awesome. Well, Boise, Idaho, it couldn't get better.
Really?
So, that's right. So would you give our audience a little bit of background on you, your story? How did you get where you are now? And what are some things that you're most passionate about?
Yeah, absolutely, Anka. Thanks for having me on. It's great to be here. So yeah, my journey started in university. I used to do these things called case competitions. Think of it like professional sports, but for nerds. So while other guys my age were playing rugby or basketball or baseball, I did presentations competitively. That was the nerd version of that. So I did that for a few years.
I bet that actually gained you a lot of friends.
Yeah, mostly other people like me, I guess. And that's how I learned how to speak. But what happened, Anka, was as I was getting more experience in these competitions, I started coaching people who are younger than me because we didn't have a coach on how to speak and no one else was there. So I started helping them. And that's how I learned how to communicate and coach other people and how to do that. So when I started Master Talk a few years later, the YouTube channel specifically, I realized everything that I was sharing to the students wasn't available for free on the internet. So I started making videos and then a few years later turned into a coaching business and what it is today.
So how much of your coaching business skills do you use still today to implement as an effective communicator?
Probably almost all of it, for sure. That was definitely the base of what I do today. And a lot of the case competitions I used to compete in as well, Anka, they were in front of business executives. So executives from Walmart and Nike and Amazon, they would come out to these competitions so they could find who the best talent is. And I coach a lot of people in the same space now on how to speak. So yeah, a lot of it rolled over for sure.
So what does it actually mean to be an effective communicator?
Now, that is a wonderful question, right? And that's the challenge. No one really knows. If I told you what makes a fast runner or somebody who runs a marathon, you could look at the exact time that somebody runs and say, well, if that person can run a marathon in less than X number of time, let's say 2 hours or something, that person is really fast, really good athlete. But how does that apply to communication? Well, the challenge is we don't really know. Does it mean you're saying less filler words? Does it mean your vocal tones are better? So the way I define communication is the progression towards one's intention of the goal. So let's say your goal is to have a bigger podcast than it already is. So if you became an even better communicator, you're already great, but let's say you become even better at communication, you could attract more people towards your show. So if you're communicating and you're practicing it and your downloads are increasing, you could say that you're a better communicator for the goals that you want to achieve. So for me, it's always about who you are and what your goal is.
So let's apply this to, say, a stage, an event where there's all kinds of communicators that take the stage. May they be facilitators, hosts, presenters, keynote speakers. How can they become more effective in their skill set? If there's any like 1, 2, 3 tips that you could give aside from, you know, I'm sure there's a lot more, but just as a top level understanding what that would make them better in their skill set.
Absolutely. So let's focus on a speaker on stage. Let me give 3 main ones. So the first one that we hear a lot, but I'll explain why, is the importance of focusing on one single presentation. And the reason why that's key is if you look at the best communicators on the planet, Tony Robbins, Les Brown, you name it, the signature or Gary Vee, they all present the same presentation over and over and over and over again. Tony Robbins has been doing his event Unleash the Power Within for literally 30, 35 years at this point. He just keeps doing the same thing. So it's day one, you talk about this, then you walk on some coals. Day two is this, day three is that. But that same structure has been the same for pretty much his whole life. But that's why he's so great at delivery. When you're constantly repeating the same information, you focus less on what do I need to say versus how I need to say it. The second piece is how do you practice effectively? Most speakers, when they practice their speeches, they usually present the whole thing over and over and over again, which I think is wrong. The way I think about it is when you practice your speech, you want to practice it like a jigsaw puzzle. So you know those jigsaw puzzles, those puzzles used to play as kids? So if I ask people, if you're working on a jigsaw puzzle, which pieces do you start with first and what? Most people tend to answer the edges. Because the corner pieces are easier to find. I can see you're resonating with that. You're like, yes. So they find the edges because they're easy to find. You open the box, they got those little corners, and then you work your way into the middle. But most people don't do that with communication. They start with the middle first. They shove a bunch of content. They get to the presentation. They ramble through the whole thing. And the last slide sounds something like this. So thanks. Not the right approach. So instead, you want to start with the edges. Practice your introduction 50 times, not 2 times. Do it 50 times. It'll only take you an hour. Same thing with the conclusion. What's a great movie with a terrible ending? Last time I checked, terrible movie. So same thing with the close and then tackle the middle. So that would be tip number 2.
I love it. So those are the 2 tips that you want to give to anyone that would be better set to become effective in their presentations when they're somewhere on stage. Now, does that change from being in person versus being delivering the same presentation, say, virtually?
Yeah, great question. So the way I see it is the techniques would still be the same. So you'd still present at the beginning and at the end. The only difference I would make is the format and how you practice it, well, it might change slightly. So for an online presentation, as an example, you might want to get a bunch of people in a Zoom call, let's say 3 people, 5 people, and practice in that Zoom call so people can look at you and go, okay, Brenda, you're not looking at the camera lens. What are you wearing?
Why what's did you behind you?
Yeah, what's behind you? What's that water bottle over there?
Whatever. I've had people asking, you know, it's like, so what are those books on your bookshelf there? Like, can you zoom in? That's why I'm like, I'm trying to actually get it as slightly unfocused as possible so that it's like, let's not get so distracted by the background. Okay, so going back to the Zoom communication as a method of delivering your presentation, what other tips do you have there?
Yeah, I would say that the next piece is an exercise called the random word exercise. So the random word exercise, Anka, is where you pick a random word like phone or screen or camera, and you practice presentations out of thin air. And what this does is it improves your resilience as a speaker.
So is it kind of like an improv type of, you know, you're doing basically improv around the topic, right?
Absolutely. And I'm happy to demonstrate if you want. But basically you pick, yeah, give me a word.
Let's do this.
Yeah, just give me a word.
Okay.
Give me anything.
Let's say, oh my gosh, I'm like, this is hard.
You're not doing the exercise I am.
Okay, computer monitor, just because I have a bunch of them in front of me right now.
Okay, perfect. So by the way, for those who are listening to this, Anka did not give me this word before this podcast.
No, this is literally drop of the hat.
Literally on the spot. So here I go. What are you looking at right now? Right in this moment. What are you spending all of your attention on? And the truth is, for most of us, the answer isn't our phones. The answer isn't the cup of coffee that we have on the left side of our tables, or maybe even the computer mouse, but rather the computer monitor. So much of us, our time is spent staring to the eyes of this computer screen. Yet, when was the last time you stared into the eyes of a loved one? When was the last time you stared into the eyes of a child that you just fall in love with every time that makes you smile? When was the last time you looked at a mountain and enjoyed nature? Yet so many of us lose the big picture of life. We're stuck in this computer monitor, and it owns our day-to-day lives. From the morning we get up to the day ends and on until the rest of our lives. So what's the key message here, Anka? The message is, stare at the right things for the right reasons. Sure, staring at a computer monitor might be good, it might be productive, but don't forget about looking at the things that really matter. Like the smile on a child's face, like the ice cream that you get to have for lunch, or more importantly, the family members that you love and cherish. So focus on the right things, and you might see what you don't actually see.
Wow!
That was great, Brandon.
Thanks.
Loved it. Okay, so I guess, you know, to become an effective communicator and to be a specialist and, you know, really skilled at this, how does other skills help or improve your success rate?
Right. So the way that I think about it, it's more of an analogy that I could share, Anka, on this, is communication is like juggling 18 balls at the same time. So one of them is eye contact. Another one is how to dress properly. Another one is vocal tone, variety, pacing. So the trick is you want to juggle one ball at a time. So I wouldn't say it's necessarily another skill, though writing could help as an example, right? If you learn to write better, you'll get better at communication. What happens is as you master one ball at a time, you get more comfortable with all of them. I'll give you the perfect example to demonstrate this. Let's say you're working on your presentation skills and you don't smile at all. So you're always like this when you present, which is very normal. That's like super common.
Because you're super focused, right?
Right. You're kind of like, right? Every time you're presenting, I was like, okay, just smile a little bit. So when I'm coaching somebody on how to smile, 6 weeks later, when they master it, I go, are you smiling when you're having a coffee with somebody? Are you smiling when you're a guest on a podcast or a host on a podcast? And then they're using that same tip and applying it across all communication scenarios. So that's the way that I would answer this question is master one technique rather than a skill, but then apply that technique across everything else that you do. So like being a better presenter made me better as a guest on a podcast and made me better on camera, etc.
So how do you handle, for example, anxiety? The anxiety that comes, you know, stage fright. A lot of people, they struggle with that and it's a real thing. How do you overcome that when you're in front of a group of people? What scares me the most is just seeing all these eyes, you know, looking at you and be like, okay now.
I love that. It's a great question. So here's the way I think about this, Anka. I think of communication and stage fright specifically like a boxing match. Okay, it's a weird analogy, but hear me out. So let's say we're in a boxing match. Not me and you, because you'd probably beat me. Let's say you have a match. And one side of the ring is the fear, the anxiety, the stress, right? That comes with communication. And the other side of the ring is your message. Why is this important? Why are we sharing it? Why should people care? Why should we care about sharing our own message? But here's the punchline. The punchline is that the goal is not to remove the fear. That's actually a bad expectation to have. Think about me. Yeah, sure, I'm the communication expert, I guess, for today's podcast. But if Elon Musk called me right now and said, hey, Brent, I need you to coach me, I would shit my pants. Like, absolutely. Like, who wouldn't, right? So even me, even despite, you know, the experience I have and everything, there's always something that scares us. So the goal is never to remove the fear. That won't get us very far. But instead saying, when in that boxing match, when your message and your fear meet in the middle, you need to make sure that your message wins the match. You need to make sure that your message gets the knockout punch. It's not about removing the fear. It's about making the message stronger than the fear that it comes with. Think about me. I started a YouTube channel on executive communication tips at the age of 22. And I started coaching CEOs who are double my age, triple sometimes, at that time. So how does that make any sense? Like literally there's people who are older than me working in that company longer than I was alive. So yeah, did I have fear when I pressed record the first time? Absolutely. I was scared. I was nervous. But I cared more about the 15-year-old girl who couldn't afford. Mm-hmm. I cared more about the 10-year-old boy in high school who might not have money for a coach. that's the person. That's the reason why I pressed record and how I figured it out. And that's the message for all of us. Don't remove the fear, but rather focus on the message and make it more important than the fear.
Love that. Now, let's take that and piggybacking on that question. Have you ever dealt with, say, a challenging event organizers, and how did you go around the situation to make it a positive interaction?
Okay. So there, I'm not sure if I'm answering this directly, so feel free to follow up. But there was a situation I remember a few years ago. I keynoted in front of 300-400 kids. It was like a communication keynote they wanted me to do on storytelling. And I practiced for months, not like weeks, months for this presentation. And I find out on the day of the presentation, literally 10 minutes before it happens, that I had to give half of it in French. And nobody told me.
Hey, you speak French. How is that a problem?
I mean, it is a problem because French is my second language, right? So I didn't prep half of it in French. So she looks at me, she's like, yeah, you speak French, right? Can you do half of it? Kind of like you, I guess, like you're a great event planner to work with, clearly. Oh, can you speak Spanish too? And can you like juggle some
ball? I just became that quintessential problematic event organizer that would ask you something like at the drop of the hat and be like, oh, I mean, you did say you speak three languages, right? I mean, how hard could it be?
Yeah, it's like... I was like, wow, I think you're the hardest event planner I've ever worked with now that I think about it. But
hey, nobody asked you to speak in Tamil, so hey.
I think you're after me, Eka. It's like, I hope not.
We got to poke some holes in this, right? Let's figure out what's happening here. So how did you deal with that? What did you do?
Yeah, you know, my perspective in life, it's a bit counterintuitive to the question you're asking, is I have a lot of empathy for event planners. Especially if you want to be a speaker in the circuit, you need to have a lot of empathy. You need to be flexible. And the reason is because event planners have a lot in their heads, especially during the event. I'm sure she didn't mean to do that to me, right? It's just, there's like 100 things spinning. There's like, okay, I got to run here. Somebody's throwing a fire over here and they're jumping around. So I feel the key is to always show up with love and affection. But then after, once you have more leverage as a speaker, I would say, just be more selective about who you pick. So for example, when I used to be on podcasts, when I started, I would just say yes to everyone. I was on a bunch of random shows, like weed shows and sports shows. It made absolutely no sense to my topic. But then after, right, just didn't make sense. But then after you get leverage, instead of like trying to repair a relationship, as you get more leverage, you just become more selective. You just go, well, this is a great show because related to what I'm doing, versus just like, oh yeah, can you like jump around and talk about broccoli? Like it doesn't make sense. Right. So I would say it's not
that
about...
That would make a great conversation topic. I should have picked that, right?
That's the key. So I would say bottom line, you know, there's always going to be challenges, especially as a speaker with an event planner. But I would say the key is, especially if your speaker wants to be successful, you always want to make sure you're the best speaker they ever interact with or work with. So that way they think really highly of you. They see you as someone who takes stuff off their plate rather than put stuff on. Like, I hate people who are high maintenance, even me as a speaker. Like, I know speakers on the circuit who just go up to their event planner and go, I need this, I need this, and this. And the event planner is like, oh my God, like, how am I supposed to deal with all this? So it just makes people's life easy. Life is short, be happy. And then if you don't like the event planner, you don't have to tell them to their face, just stop working with them. That's all.
Before we move any further, I wanted to give a quick shout out to our main sponsor, Trifan Events, which is a boutique event planning and production agency that will come alongside you, offering personalized event planning and technical support, strategic event design, production and technology management, and flawless execution for live, virtual, and hybrid events. The team at Trifan Events is passionate about planning and producing event experiences that get people involved with true moments of interaction, engagement, and co-creation, while offering white glove treatment throughout the entire planning process, enabling you to reach your event goals with the use of creativity, production tools, and event technology. Find out how Trifan Events can plan and produce your event become memorable. Go to trifanevents.com. So let's turn this question around a bit so that we can provide some resources for event planners that, like, for example, if you have some tips, tricks, tools that would help an event planner to select the right presenters and keynote speakers that engage, inform, and entertain their audience, especially, you know, if they're maybe presenting virtually or hybrid, what would those tips be?
Yeah, great, great question. Here's the way I would think about this as an event planner. I would pick a key member members of the audience that I know will be there and just do short focus interviews with them and ask them what's important to them, what matters to them. And as we ask more questions, it becomes much easier for us to figure out what type of speaker they're looking for. So I'll give you an example. Let's say you're running a tech conference and you're looking for different types of speakers, but you're not very techie, let's say, because you know the tech for the events, but like the new trendy, like AI, blockchain, whatever. So instead of guessing, all you have to do is you just go to the key audience and you just go, what's hot right now? What's trendy? What are people excited about? And then they talk about what they care about. And then you could ask them the follow-up question, which is, who are the influencers that you're currently looking at, that you're currently following? And then you get a list of people really quickly. And then from that list, what I would do is I would just look up speaker reels, see who has speaking opportunities, who has some type of footage across social. And then I would start messaging those people or finding contacts. That's the way I would play it, to specialize the topic more to what the audience wants. So there's a big difference between giving a communication workshop, let's say, versus a communication workshop that's very specific to the technology community, because it'll add more value to that specific demo.
I love that. And I think this strategy actually also opens the door for a lot of the speakers that have not necessarily had a platform, a big enough platform. It becomes more inclusive in a sense that you might be an expert, you know, in a field, but you have not had the opportunity to present at a lot of, like, say, some of those tech conferences that always in so many ways pick the same person, you know, because it sounds safe, right? But now you give the opportunity for other people to be included by doing just a little bit of research. Like you said, a little bit of legwork goes a long way to find, one, the right person for the job, but also for your audience, the right message for your audience, but also include other people into this pool of, you know, speakers that, let's just be honest, sometimes it can be very hard to break into, you know, if you're a keynote, regardless of your topic.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely a tough industry out there. That's why I think selection is key. And then another piece of advice I could jump in with that's really easy is look at comparable conferences and see whose speakers they selected. And you can quickly vet their list and see who's good enough for yours. That makes sense for your audience as well. And that's also another strategy that's a more 80-20.
As long as it doesn't end up where all conferences basically invite the same speakers, because that's where, you know, there's no more ability to make it inclusive to other speakers that are just coming into the industry, but they do have something that they have to say. That's why for me, I feel like virtual events have opened in a way the door into the opportunity that it was given for many other speakers now remotely to separate themselves, you know, from the rest. One, by just being able to present virtually, that was like definitely a huge differentiator, but also by bringing their message to the table in a digital format, but in a way that it could be now it's content that it's the speaker reel that you create. Many speakers that go to in-person events prior to, you know, us streaming events and recording events and putting it on demand have had very little reels to show for some of their talks, just because unless you hire someone like to be there and videotape that particular talk, you wouldn't have a way to show it post-event. You know, now everything is online. So many ways, you know, all the hybrid events that we do, there's always going to be a virtual component, and that means recorded content that you can leverage for something else, for a speaker reel later, or even as an example, hey, this is the type of talk that I'm good at, or this is my expertise. Now that we talked a little bit about hybrid events, what are your thoughts on keeping a hybrid audience engaged if you've had experience with that, and share a few tips on that?
Yeah, hybrid events, what I would say, Anka, is it's a fascinating question, because on one hand, you're in person, but you're also speaking virtually. So if I was doing a hybrid event, what I would focus on as a speaker anyways, and then feel free to follow up, is focus on the live audience to give your energy and use that momentum to interact with the virtual. So the key is, and it's up to you to figure out the balance, but I would say what's easier at the beginning is you focus on that live audience, you add value, do boom, boom, boom. And then as you're asking questions back to the audience, you also shout out the virtual room. Okay, so everyone, I want you all to think about this. And hey, virtual room, I'm thinking about you too. I want you all to think about it in your screens at home. So notice I'm asking the same question, but I'm framing it for the whole context so they feel seen, heard, and understood as well. So that's the way I would do it. I would just tweak my languaging, but always start with the live audience first.
I love it. And it's fabulous, Steve, because I feel like a lot of presenters, they get so overwhelmed just by the idea that they have to entertain two different audiences with different needs. needs and they don't even know where to start, you know, but building that energy, like you said, it's important to actually keep you going and get you to be more comfortable in this position that a lot of keynotes, a lot of presenters haven't necessarily had the opportunity to be in. Here's a question where I'm actually turning it a little bit onto more of a social skills, personal, I suppose. What are some of your tips on new ways of communicating with others, you know, may those be people around you, friends, coworkers, stakeholders, without feeling uncomfortable or intimidated by them? Like you said in your story that you were so young when you started coaching people that were much, much older than you. If you want to touch a little bit on that, like how did you overcome that, you know, intimidation in a way, like not that you were per se intimidated, but you could have been very much so.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I definitely was, by the way. When I started coaching, people were much older than me. This probably happened 4 years ago. So definitely get it.
You're so old right now, Brendan. Yeah, I don't even know why we're having this conversation. Yeah. I can't do this with such old people like yourself.
Yeah, I know. I've had a long life, Anka. Definitely a long life. I've learned a lot in the journey. But yeah, you're absolutely right, Anka, is how do you get over the fear of new interactions? Whether that person is much older than you, much younger in any case. Here's an analogy. Once again, I'm very counterintuitive, right? So I always like to give the weird insight. So here's my weird insight for the day. Let's say, okay, hypothetically, so let's imagine that you meet somebody new, one person, every few days. Most people don't, by the way. Most people don't meet somebody new every few days. But let's assume that. So let's say every 3 to 4 days, you meet one new person, okay? And let's say you do that for a year. So every year, you'll meet 100 people. Makes sense, right? So every few days, one person, in a year, 100. Let's play that out for 50 years. Let's say you live 50 more years than the age that you are currently. So let's say you're 28 and you live until 78. 50 years times 100 people, not to make this too crazy of a math quiz, is 5,000. So why is 5,000 so important? The reason that number is probably one of the most important numbers of this episode is the following. Everyone's trying to like everyone else. Oh, I really hope everyone loves me. Really hope everyone likes me. But the truth is you only get to speak to 5,000 people in your life. Out of the billions of people in the world, you only get to shake hands with 5,000. So the question you need to ask yourself is, who do you want those 5,000 people to be? And that's a very different question. Because then you'll go from, oh, I really hope everyone likes me, to wait a second, do I like them? Can I really put this person in my 5,000? What qualities do they have? What values do they have? So to answer your question, was I intimidated by a lot of them? Sure. But I also don't have to work with everyone, right? The CEO of a bank who doesn't like me, I don't need that person to like me. I just need 100 people in the world to be my clients, and I'll do very good in business. So the trick is to get to those 100 people, you need to be willing to shake hands with 1,000, with 500, with 600. And every 10 podcast interviews, every 5 interviews, every 10 conversations, there's going to be one diamond. And when you meet that one diamond, you stick to that diamond. And you're like, oh, I really like you. Let's make sure we get a follow-up call. But it's normal if a lot of the times that doesn't happen. I'm in a mastermind right now with 200 people. I think I had 50 coffees with people and I liked 6 of them.
Sounds like your criteria is very tight as far as who's going to make the cut or not.
And you know why it's tight? It's not because Brendan's special or anything. It's because we're all living on borrowed time. We don't have time to please everyone. I wish I had time. Even me, I know I'm old. Like we're talking about really old. But yeah. It's like crazy. It's like, even me, I don't have a lot of time. I only get to shake 4,000 more hands. So I want to make sure that I'm building relationships with that 1% who are just fantastic. Because those people know everyone else I want to talk to. And that's the way I approach it.
So Brendan, how does one get so wise beyond their age so early in life?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question people rarely ask me, right? So I'm glad you asked me. Here's my answer to it, Anka. Life is too short not to. You know, we live in an age of information. So the secret to, I guess, my wisdom, let's call it, put it in quotation marks, is I have an open mind. I'm willing to learn from people who have played this game before me. There's millions, billions of people have played this game before me. They have much more wisdom, whereas most of us, especially in our 20s and 30s, we have big egos. We think we have all the answers. We think we know everything. Whereas the truth is, if somebody is double my age, is telling me to do something, and they think it's a bad idea for me to do something or a good idea, I might not listen to them. But if 10 people who are 50 years old are saying, and they're all very successful in business, they do much better than I, and they're saying all the same thing, there's probably some truth there. I should probably listen to what they're saying. Oh, maybe I shouldn't get married at 18 years old. Maybe I shouldn't have kids at 20. Maybe I should wait until I'm 30 or 35. You know, like those little pieces of knowledge just stack up. So the analogy in my mind that can help people is you can think of my brain like 5,000 tape recorders playing at the same time. So I've listened to thousands and thousands and thousands of podcasts of different people and how they live their life. And I take my favorite thing from all of them. And that's how I got to this level very quickly. It's not an accident. I just listen to 2 hours of podcasts every single day religiously.
That's a lot of hours. How do you listen to 200, you said?
2 hours a day.
2 hours. I was like, wow, 200. This makes no sense to my head. Are you going like at like 10 times the speed? Because I'm guilty of actually listening on fast forward, you know, every time I listen to something. But I'm like, okay, this is beyond my understanding right now. We need to get to the bottom of this.
Right. And just
what's the secret? Because I would love that, especially when it comes to my books, you know, my Audible books, to where I'm like, man, if I could listen to so many books in just one day, oh my goodness.
You'd be like on another. So here's the secret, Anka. A couple of things. I love that you're asking me this because very few people do, by the way. So the trick is, I have a couple of thoughts on this. I'm actually a very anti-book guy. I don't really like books that much. And I'll explain why. I know that sounds weird for somebody like me. You're kind of like, okay, but doesn't this guy read like 1,000 books? No, not at all. I only recommend like 5 books. And the reason is because it takes too long to read one. You have to like invest.
But you can listen. You can listen. That's where I'm like, I get it. Like I have a million of books in behind me and I've read maybe half of them, not all of them, but I've definitely listen to more than half.
Right. But the reason I bring this up, even listening, hear me out on this. Okay. It's a controversial perspective. Might as well give it because yes.
No, totally.
So you're right. Like there's definitely books that you can spend, let's say the average book is 10 hours to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But with that 10 hours, I can listen to 10 different interviews. So let's say I have 10 books on my shelf. It'll take me 100 hours to listen to all 10 books. That makes sense, right? Okay, clear?
Well, assuming that you don't go a little bit like 1.5, 1.75.
Okay, fair. I'm not as smart as you, so I always do 1x.
I'm just saying, like, trying to fast forward a little bit, you know, the timing that, like you said, 10 hours is a long time, right? Just to be able to get that in maybe, you know, 7-hour time frame.
Fair enough. But I like that we're playing this game, but this is good. But we could do that with podcasts too, right? So the speed doesn't. So let's just assume 1x to keep it simple.
Okay.
So let's say we got 10 books on our shelf, okay? Because people are always recommending books that we never read, right? Because there's just so many, right? And every book, let's say, takes 10 hours, assuming, you know, Brendan's speed. Let's call it Brendan's speed.
Okay, got it.
Right? So it'll take me 100 hours to listen to all books, but it'll take me 10 hours to listen to an hour-long interview of each of those authors. Because the problem with publishers is, I mean, a problem with publishers, but that's what publishers do, is they force you to stretch out the content of your book so that the book sells better. Whereas the truth is if you watch a talk set at Google, the author is just going to summarize all of their main points in an hour anyways. Like a good example of this is Greg McKeown, right? Essentialism, right? The author of the book Essentialism.
Love that book. Yep.
Right? So I didn't read that book, but I watched the 1 hour Google talk and that was more than enough. It's like, I got the main ideas. Let me go on to the next book. Right? It's like, okay, I got it. Like most people reading the book aren't implementing everything in the book. Let's face it. Come on, right?
Yeah.
So the secret to my success, Anka, is I get introduced to 2 new people every single day. Pay attention to that. 2 people every single day. That means in a year, I have 700 tape recorders spinning in my head. Like this morning was Jewel, who is like a recording artist. So I learned something from her. And then the next day, it's somebody else. But I've been doing this for 5 years. Like literally, Lewis Howes, which I'm sure you're familiar with, he is the host of the School of Greatness. I have listened to almost every episode of the School of Greatness podcast. It has like 1,100 episodes. I've listened to like 700 of them.
That's awesome. And right? Free advertising as well.
Yeah, free advertising. I mean, he deserves it. He does great work. But the point is that 700 hours, I probably could have listened. Maybe I could have read 70 books, but I wouldn't have remembered any of it. Whereas with podcasting, because I listened to all those episodes, I have the same knowledge that Lewis does because I did all, it's like I did every interview myself too. So yeah, anyways, long story short, that's why I guess I'm wise beyond my years.
I love it. Well, thank you so much for giving us a little bit of insight on that. Yeah. This has been been a fantastic conversation so far. So thank you for sharing your well beyond your age wisdom, your expertise in your communication specialty. So in closing, if you had one piece of advice that you wanted to give, say, a beginner MC, host, presenter, speaker out there that is hoping to get on bigger and larger stage, what would that piece of advice be?
Yeah, I'll end with two. I'll give you a book recommendation, which is funny because I just shitted on books. And then I'll give you some life advice. So by the way, that means when I recommend a book, it's worth reading because okay. I don't read books.
Let's hear it.
So it actually makes it more powerful. So the book is called Thirst by Scott Harrison. So Scott Harrison's The Sea of Charity Water. I love, love, love his work and the way that he implements a lot of the stuff we talked about today practically. So he took storytelling. He raised $500 million for clean water. Really smart guy. And the end quote that I love to share is a question. And the question for all of us is, how would the world change if you were an exceptional communicator? You know, I believe communication is shrouded with so much nerves and anxiety and fear and stress. And my perspective on this is why? Why can't we just focus on the positive? There's a lot of positives to communication. But find that reason for you. Why do you want to become a master communicator? And once you find that reason, it'll be much easier for you to do all of the exercises. You'll do the random word exercise 3,000 times like I've had. You will do the presentations with the puzzles. You will put in the reps once you figure out why it matters to you.
I love that you actually mentioned Charity Water just because I've been a supporter of that mission for many years ever since we started, actually. Definitely can stand behind that. Now, if our audience wants to connect with you some more, where can they find you?
Yeah, definitely. Such a great conversation, Anka. Thanks for having me. So yeah, two different ways. Super easy. Number one is the YouTube channel. You go Master Talk. You just type that in one word and you will have access to hundreds of free videos and how to communicate ideas effectively. And for those of you who are interested in coaching, come to one of my free interactive live Zooms. We do one every few weeks. And if you want to register for that for free, it's rockstarcommunicator.com.
And I'll make sure I'll have those links into the episode notes. Brendan, thank you so much for this time together. This was fantastic. I can't wait to have this episode aired out because definitely has a lot of nuggets of wisdom and tips that any communicator, and I mean, we should all be good communicators, like you said, in the quote that you just ended with, we should all be so that we can make an impact and change the world, the small world that we all, you know, have influence over. So thank you for your time today. And I hope to see you at some of your classes. Maybe I need to take one of those classes myself. Hello.
Thanks, Anka. You're awfully kind.
Thank you. Okay, friends, this is it for today's episode. Thank you so much for listening. Make sure you check out the episode notes. As we have mentioned, there's going to be a special gift from Brendan, free workshop to improve your communication skills. And the link is going to be in the notes. Stay tuned for our next episode airing out soon. And until then, have a fantastic rest of your day.
Thank you for listening to the Events Demystified podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please take a moment to review it, rate it, and share it with other event professionals that could benefit from it. Connect with us on social at Events Demystified Podcast. We would love to hear from you and what you're up to. If you'd like to learn more about Tree Fan Event Services and find out if we're a good fit in supporting your event, can we help your event be successful with a 20-minute free consultation? Link in the episode's notes. Thanks for tuning in.